If I look around this room of Oxford undergraduates, 40% of you were privately educated in a country in which 7% of students have private educations. 80% of you come from meaningful social and economic privilege. As we heard a moment ago, at my university, Yale, there are more students from the top 1% of the income distribution than from the entire bottom half. Now, my university's admissions process is corrupt, and failures of meritocracy might explain it. But Oxford's is not corrupt. You can't buy a place here. There is no meaningful legacy preference. And yet, nevertheless, you're all rich, and you all come from privileged backgrounds, or almost all. Now, why is that? The reason is straightforward. Famous U.S. baseball player once said, "Practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect." Meritocracy, in fact, is not, as we just heard, that advantage turns on effort and talent. It turns on effort and talent, and one more thing, investment. It turns on how much is invested in developing a child's talent using their own efforts. And the investment that different kinds of children get in meritocratic societies is absolutely enormously different. In the United States, the richest private schools spend over $75,000 per pupil per year on educating their children, in a society in which public schools on average spend about $12,000. In this country, the richest private schools spend over £30,000 a year educating their children. These massive investments produce massive differences in childhood achievement, not because of legacy admissions, but because when you get trained, you get good at things. And the result, therefore, is that a meritocracy, when it works as designed, favors those whose parents are in a position best to invest in them, who have the money, who have the skills, and who have the free energy and space to do so. And believe me, meritocrats give rich parents the ability to do so. I'll get it in one second. When Michael Young invented the term meritocracy, the richest in England had only half the share of national income that they have today. The richest 10% of earners made twice as much as the poorest 10% of earners. Today, they make four times as much. A graduate of this university will make 50% more in her first year out than a graduate of the University of York. So meritocracy creates an inequality in which rich parents have the opportunity to spend all this money on their children, which is why meritocratic children are also rich children. That's the first point. Meritocracy excludes most of society from meaningful advantage. Second point, it's not actually fun to have that much invested in you as a kid. It's not easy. You are poked and prodded and tested and subject to tutors and classes and extra help and schools and exams. And you do this from the earliest age up until adulthood. And then you come here and you work hard. And then you get a job at McKinsey or Goldman Sachs and you work 80 hours a week. And then you become parents. And you live in fear that your children will lose the caste that you have acquired by working so hard. And so as parents, you do two jobs. You squeeze into your children the same thing that was squeezed into you as you're working to try to make the money to enable you to do that. It's not surprising that in England, exam anxiety has now overtaken body image as the largest source of stress in wealthy children. It's not surprising that in a study of a wealthy American private school, 50% of children had moderate to severe clinical symptoms of depression, and 75% had moderate to severe clinical symptoms of anxiety. These are not easy lives to live. You will be extremely wealthy, wealthier than you can imagine, wealthier than prior elites have been, but you will not be well, and your children will not be well. And so even as meritocracy excludes everyone else, it will ensnare those of us in this room who are fortunate. But that doesn't mean that in human terms, it serves our interests. And so meritocracy creates an elite that is indifferent to the common good and that believes in its own entitlements, which is very damaging for society and not so great for the elite either. At the same time, meritocracy tells the rest of society that it's their fault that they aren't in this room. That if they'd been a little more talented, if they'd been a little harder working, if they'd been a little more virtuous, if they'd had a little more merit, then they would have been able to measure up. They would have succeeded. And so they are to blame for what is in fact a form of structural exclusion. And so meritocracy makes the elite smug and leaves everyone else naked in their rejection. And that's an extremely damaging place to be. That explains why in your country and in my country, those who are excluded by meritocracy now have a lower life expectancy than they did 3 years ago. Let me be clear, there has been no other time or place in human history in which absent war or massively fatal plague, and COVID is not that plague, there's been a diminution in life expectancy for a large segment of the population. The source is addiction, the source is alcoholism, the source is obesity, the source is suicide. These are internalized forms of self-hatred produced by what meritocracy says to the people whom it excludes, just as neoliberalism and Davos are internalized forms of conceit produced by what meritocracy says to the elite. So once again, meritocracy excludes most people from advantage. It ensnares the rich in a web of effort and distortion. And it distorts all of us individually and collectively, making us value the wrong things in the wrong ways and for the wrong reasons, which is, as the motion says, why there is no merit in meritocracy, or why, as I would say, merit is a sham.